Welcome to All About APIs. On this podcast, you'll hear from seasoned API practitioners, product leaders, and architects on what it takes to successfully design, launch, and maintain APIs that unlock new growth opportunities. Hello and welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another episode of the All About APIs podcast. This is me, Buddha, product evangelist here at Tyke, and I am joined here by my co-host, Setkia Bhushamada. Hey.
Hi, yeah. Thanks, Buddha. My name is Setkia Bhushamada. I'm a lead solutions architect here at Tyke. Very pleased to be here and talk about all things API. So very excited to kick this off.
In today's episode, we are going to be looking at a couple of very interesting things. We're going to be diving into the world of developer experience and what that entails. What does that mean? Some of the best practices, do's and don'ts. And then we'll be looking at how something like developer experience and the importance of it in the world of API-led product growth. What does that mean for businesses? What kind of value that it generates? Is it just for developers? Is it just for businesses? Is it an amalgamation of all of it put together? What is the value of having really great developer experience in place and having really good practices built around that? So to unveil the secrets in this journey is here today with us, Travis Koslin. Hello, Travis. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Buddha. Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be able to join you in chat today. You're talking a lot about secrets, and I don't know if I have any secrets to tell, but definitely some interesting experience for sure.
Well, I guess the audience is going to find out over the next 30 to 40 minutes. So we'll see exactly. The thing we are looking forward to is a really great discussion around this. So thank you so much. Perhaps a quick introduction. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background. What are you doing at the moment and why developer experience is so exciting for you?
Yeah, so I focus on developer experience. I work as a principal engineer at SPS Commerce. And SPS Commerce is an organization that runs the largest retail network in the world, connecting suppliers and retailers together to exchange data, invoices, purchase orders, that type of information. And so APIs are a large part of what we do, and developer experience is a large passion of mine. And we try to connect those two areas together a lot that I'm sure we're going to dive into today, but always had a passion for connecting and working with engineers and their experiences and really how they get their work done and get it done a lot more efficiently and hopefully with a much better quality of life too.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's a great introduction. We've come from a world where user experience has been a big part of how you build and develop design products. From the customer side of things, we've heard terminologies around customer experience. With developer experience, is that a subset of any of this? Is it its own thing? Is it something that is massive? That is something which is small? What is developer experience? Tell us a little bit more about what it is and your experiences around this.
Yeah, depending on who you talk to, it's a bit of a moving target, right? Like, what is developer experience? I know some have kind of related it to like, well, developer advocacy, developer evangelist, and sure, there's some tangential relations in there. But at the end of the day, I kind of think of it as it's really a new term, right? We've only seen it in the last 5 years, and it's kind of grown or been born out of the need of maybe what the cloud has produced over the past decade and just the advances in technology, where now we see organizations that are 10 plus, 20 plus years old, are starting to deal with this plethora of observability tooling, CI/CD tooling, local configurations and development patterns. And teams are left to fend for themselves. They're left in this spot of like, well, what do I pick and choose for my team? As our lead engineers are working and thinking, they're like, well, this worked before, I'll grab that and I'll grab this and I'll kind of marry them together. But it's not their full-time job to figure out how to get the best CI/CD deployment experience with all the bells and whistles in it. They need to deliver a product. And so they're kind of left with this maybe subpar or not great experience in a lot of cases as they try to integrate some of the tooling that they need to get their job done. And so when we talk about developer experience and user experience, kind of we're seeing developer experience is really that's, I see it as a sub persona, right? The user experience in an organization might be, well, I need to do some onboarding. How do I receive my onboarding training? And how do I communicate information back to HR? We're not interested in that from a developer experience. From a developer experience, we're analyzing and studying how does the developer get their work done? And in order to do that, they have to work in these, what I would call rainforests, right? There's one of my favorite quotes, which is developers work in rainforests, not planned gardens. This idea that we don't have time to curate planned gardens of all the different tools and how they're going to interact the way we want because we're delivering value from our delivery teams. And so born out of this jungle then of different trees that are kind of popping up all over the place. And that's a problem. We need to get back and figure out, how do we plan this out? How do we take a much more engineering approach to our development experience than we have in the past, which is funny because we're engineers, right? And so developer experience is different from user experience because it marries together kind of our best practice technical principles with it, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I think it is like you say, it's all about, how does a developer get the work done? What are some of the tooling around it? What are some of the best ways to actually make our lives as developers as easy as possible? Because ultimately, if we are the ones building the product, we don't want to be fighting with the process. We don't want to be fighting with the tools. We want to be productive. We want to actually build things that last, that scale, that's something that we can be really proud of. And we want to invest our energies into doing that, as opposed to the toolings and then understanding and learning and fighting with it, which is not intuitive and all of that. So absolutely agree with you on that. And I think you mentioned something very interesting around onboarding being some of the important parts where in the journey of user experience. I would imagine onboarding as a fact is also very important in terms of developer experience as well, simply because how easy are you making it for people or developers to actually use and you get started with your product? If you have to read like a 10-page manual before you get started with a product, you're probably not going to be investing that much amount of time as compared to something like a couple of clicks and I'm in there, I'm getting started. It's the time to hello world is so very important these days to get to that first initial step so that now I can start building the next areas and elements. So absolutely agree with you on that.
Yeah, I was just trying to connect the difference of like onboarding from a developer perspective versus a user perspective. So obviously if we're talking about tech principles onboarding, 100% that relates to developer experience for sure.
I like, there's a good metric. Is time to code in production, specifically on the onboarding piece. I've seen some companies set very clear expectations. You know, as a senior developer, within the first week, you'll have deployed your first production code. It's not going to be anything grand, of course, but yeah, it's nice to be able to set the expectation that our onboarding is locked pretty tight. And just to get my two cents in real quick about everything discussed, I couldn't agree more with what Travis said, especially with what you said, Buddha. I think why DevX was born is because of the oversaturation of decisions and choices available, combined with CV-driven development, combined with very shiny, sexy blogs written by Netflix and Airbnb and Google, who are solving Google and Airbnb and Netflix-esque problems at scales that they don't have. So I'm a developer who's building a CRUD app, and I came across a blog that Netflix is, and about microservices. And so I'm immediately inspired to use microservices for my next project, even though it's not necessarily applicable or the best tool for the choice. Because that's what we do as developers, right? Is pick the best tool for the choice. So yeah, I couldn't agree more with what you said. I think especially more so, DevX has become more important just because there's so many different ways to do stuff. I like to talk about the perfect stack all the time. As a developer, what's the perfect stack?
Is there such a thing as a perfect stack, do you think?
I think so. And I think it's intensely personal. And I think you can have a few different flavors of it depending on the use case. Are you just building a CRUD app that consumes REST APIs? I have a perfect stack in mind. And one that integrates with CI/CD, one that integrates with OpenAPI spec, GraphQL. Yeah, I am pretty opinionated about my perfect stack. How about streaming? So there's no perfect stack for all use cases, but the foundation looks pretty similar. And I know people will probably argue that to say so, but it's not about, again, for 95% of use cases out there, and this is not a popular decision because it's really boring, but for 95% of use cases out there, no, the difference between Golang and Java in terms of performance is not going to matter to your company. And so use the language that is going to be comfortable for you, the one that you don't have to learn, and that's going to allow you to get to market quickly. Same with front end. If you're really good at React, then perhaps don't invest the time to learn Vue, unless as an organization, we've decided to do that. So boring matters. And I think I'm reading a lot, especially on different Hacker News and a bit on Reddit and Medium and stuff like that. LinkedIn even, I feel like it's come back. It started really simple with the MVC framework, and it got really complex with single page applications and progressive web apps. And now it's kind of coming back and people are saying, well, you know what? For most cases, MVC is pretty good. Just spin something up in PHP. I'm not going to go that far. My perfect stack is certainly not an MVC framework, but you know, to each their own. It's the important metric is developer velocity. I think that's the point of DevX, especially with API-led product growth, right? It's how fast can we get to market? So
what you called out about the teams that are trying to solve problems maybe with the wrong tool just because it's the cool tool is part of what I guess bred some of the DX problems that we deal with in an organization too, right? Because it's like, oh, I just brought in this other observability tool because it looked cool. And then, you know, it gets this kind of grassroots adoption. And then like, okay, well, what do we do with that now? Because it's not part of our official offering of what we're giving to teams. And it's definitely, I don't want to say it because I hate using the G word, the governance word, but to some degree, governance, which I often instill is more about collaboration and awareness, is so necessary to help drive the direction of your experience in the organization.
I want to ask a question about that, Travis. And I struggle with this too, so I'm curious everyone's opinion. What is the balance between empowering developers to select tools versus when do we say, it's probably enough of that? Because as a principal engineer, I think you'd agree, our job is to bridge gaps also between teams. So to roll out a tool is a lot of work, especially across teams. So what does that look like?
Yeah, we've had a ton of discussions about the governance space in general. One of them, which we can dive into later, is like governance and API standards and stuff. And part of that, then another section is we've been developing these guardrails. And these guardrails are doing things exactly like what languages are you approved to use in the organization? And it's not trying to stifle innovation. That's what every engineer, the first kind of reaction is like, oh, you're stifling innovation. You're shutting us down from working on these more popular things or doing it the way I want to do it. And the reality is we are, because a lot of engineers are there in some cases just for the build out and then they're gone. And now we're left to clean up the long-term maintenance of what that is. And when you have an ecosystem that's like all Java APIs and applications, and then you throw in the Python one, how do I build an effective team that can operationalize both of those? It's really hard. And in a lot of cases, there's other maintenance too, in terms of, well, I had a shared library that I used across all my other apps to provide this API standard effectiveness. And now I can't use that because you use Python. So we talk a lot about like proximity in that case. Like, what is the proximity to your team that you should be using? And then we also use the word, at least I do, Goldilocks, right? The idea of Goldilocks scenarios where it's like, we're not going to just say thou must use Java, but the reality of it is there's probably 3-4 most kind of these Goldilocks patterns, 3 levels that one of them should fit what you need to do. When you talk about the perfect stack, right? It's like probably one of these stacks will fit your scenario based on the niche of software that we're building, at least at SPS Commerce. So driving people down that road. And when they do have an idea, they're like, oh, I want to introduce this other language or this other tool or this other thing. Oftentimes, I drive that towards collaboration. Come work with us. Come talk to us why you need this. 9 times out of 10, we quickly discover that there's another tool we already have to do it that they just didn't know about that is already fully adopted. The other 1 out of 10 times, it's, okay, let's go down this road. Let's explore it. And in those scenarios, one of 2 things usually happens. First, they realize, oh, wow, this is a lot of work for a little bit of value that I'm not necessarily seeing. Like, you want to adopt Go to get that performance. And it's like, well, now I can't use that shared library. And now my build system doesn't work with, like, maybe the value is there. It's negligible. Who even cares about this? Or number 2, it turns into real innovation and it does fundamentally change the way we work, which is fantastic. I'm glad we went down that route. But going through that funnel is essential to kind of feed that process, so to speak.
So this might be an unpopular opinion in most cases, but really for me, I'm a big fan of standards and governance. I think I know this is not something that a lot of people look into, but open standards, open APIs, any kind of governance that is put in place, because I'm a firm believer, because I know I was in the same camp where I used to think that these are going to be stifling innovation. My God, I have to look at approvals. I have to look at this doc and that doc, and this is all going to be get into my head, and that's going to be a problem. But really, if you really sit back and think about it, the simple principles that we are trying to follow is looking, if we think about developer velocity, having to adopt a new technology, which may not be tested enough, that kind of goes against the principle. Plus, the other thing that you rightfully mentioned is that your organization at the moment may not be built for that, which means that your hiring decisions may have been completely different. Your overall team strategy, the security stack, the security standards, all of that might be based on things that you might be familiar with, you might be using at the moment, and introducing something while in performance, pure performance terms of the APIs themselves, you might earn an inch, but you might lose out almost a foot because the amount of time it's going to actually take for teams to get on board and then collaborate on that might be a lot higher. So for me, governance and standardization, something that is predictable, something that is more comprehensible, is always going to be foundational to the world of any form of innovation. You cannot build a rock solid building on shaky foundations. So you need to have that to really look at what is your principle? What are your principles around access control, for instance? What are your principles around the right conventions that you might be using? If like five different teams are using five different conventions, trying to unify that, trying to make sense of that, all of that is going to be so very painful. And we've seen this in the world of financial services, for instance, where when fintechs came in, the reason why open banking standards came in or PSD2 sort of came in, one of the big reasons for that, every bank was doing things completely differently. They were trying to expose data in very different ways. Their stack was completely different. And it was a nightmare trying to add any value or build any application which required unification of even like a couple of services. So that's kind of where standards would bring in, because now that you've got a uniformity, something predictable in terms of the basics of security is going to be taken care of, the basic formats are going to be taken care of, now you can start thinking about innovation. Okay, now that we've got this foundation done, we can now build products that people actually need. We can build products that is going to be revenue generators. So that is my take. It may not always be the most popular opinion, but I know with you, Travis, you've been doing some work around an API style guide for your organization. So maybe tell us a little bit more about that and what that entails.
Yeah, we've been kind of going down this route of thinking in terms of an API first mindset, right? Which is a fairly buzzwordy thing to say these days for sure, but starting to think of our APIs as products, as APIs are not an enabler to the future product we want to build. They are the product themselves. It has customers, both internal and external. And so as we've been going down that route, it's clear to us, and I mean, it's been clear for many years, it's just a really difficult thing to do is apply these standard design principles and practices, and just even like, how does it look and feel across all of our APIs? We run about 400 APIs today. Most of them are internal. We have about a dozen external, but even just internally, we want to be able to drink our own champagne and do things well to enable that velocity for our teams. And so much like we've had a design system for so many years that has given us the exact pixel by pixel representation of what our UIs should look like. But we haven't done that for APIs because we haven't treated them the same way, right? So each team has been left to build their own API the way they dream up. And REST, of course, is what we consider as table stakes if we're getting started and building GraphQL on top of that or doing some other architectural styles as necessary. But REST is really where we're focusing our API platform. And to do that, REST doesn't give us all the details we need, right? We can interpret REST in so many different ways. We might not even agree on the exact implementation of it in some cases and from status codes and their usage. And so our style guide is all about a couple things. Number one, driving consistency across the APIs, which is, of course, massively important for developer experience. There's no reason I should touch one API and it, for some reason, behaves differently than another for certain status codes or whatever. Secondly, is kind of the idea that after consistency, it's like, well, we don't need our engineers thinking differently in this regard. Like, it's just what I would call undifferentiated engineering. It's like, let's just get past these style things and move to the more important business questions and the business value that we want to offer in our API. And so we've had teams that have different style guides. So we've been on this journey of like aggregating the experience, the different style guides of API designs from across the organization, taking the best of it. I'm not just looking at our own examples too. We're looking at external examples. There's lots of great ones out there already from some of the big players that you'd expect. Bringing that together to say, here's our agreement as a team in some cases, which is compromised because we have certain scenarios that lead us down a certain route. That's okay. In other ways, just requiring that, kind of engineers kind of go down this road of building their APIs to this particular standard. And it's been really helpful. I think of APIs as like the universal language of development, which obviously playing off math is the universal language. But yeah, in development, like we have this polyglot ecosystem, like we were just talking about, where we have four different languages and the communities don't really speak super well to each other in the org. They're four separate communities, but where they do all speak is they all speak API, right? Mm-hmm. That as where we're trying to pursue and how we, of course, integrate like many companies across teams. And so pulling them together with these API standards has been so helpful in terms of not collaboration just for the API spec, but just for building our domain model that we didn't necessarily have standardized before. And so part of this is driving us towards just that further collaboration of that API first as a cultural shift within the organization.
And Travis, at what point would you say you ask developers to consider the style guide? Is this something that's enforced, quote unquote, say perhaps in a tooling perspective? Or is it more of a, hey, read this, get started guide before you contribute your first line of code?
We knew getting started out of it that at some point most engineers won't read it or won't care about that style guide. And so we knew that the style guide is the foundation. We kind of need to write it down before we can go ahead and agree on it and then automate it. So automation was always our goal. But at the same time, we do have a nice documented, readable kind of version of it available that engineers can also go and take a look at and read through it. And you will have those passionate individuals, bless their hearts, when they go through and read that much documentation. It's great to see. But at the same time, automation had to happen. So we're in a process right now where we don't enforce it in the sense of like, we're not going to block your deploy if you're breaking the standards, as an example, but we will notify you. And so we've been on a journey in a couple other DX spaces with like standardizing our CI/CD platform. So it's everybody's using this, it's centralized templates, and it's allowed us to really augment our system to take advantage of it at a platform perspective where it's like, oh, I can add this new behavior and now everybody gets it. So we had that capability where we were publishing API specs that say, oh, well, let's just insert in there. Let's take advantage of that part of the pipeline and now say, hey, everyone who had an API spec before, now we're linting it according to the best practice standards that we have. And so that's done with Spectral UI, which is pretty popular open source kind of YAML JSON linter. And we're building that out. So now, anytime you do a deploy to a pre-production environment of any kind, it'll let you know that you've broken a standard. And we do separate between like warnings and errors. So at some point, we hope to flip the switch where we will then actually break your build if you're breaking an error versus a warning. And so in our standards, we use the RFC terminology around like must versus should or should not or must not to kind of identify like where you're allowed a little bit of wiggle room and where you're not. And so today nothing breaks, but we do get big pop-up messages that appear on the UI as soon as you build to go, hold the phone. Are you sure this is what you want to do?
Love it. Public shaming is also works well in a tight-knit team. I don't mean that literally, but you know, you're a good group. Oh, so-and-so just broke the build and you get to gamify it. That's it.
I think that is the other side of public shaming, right? You can congratulate someone for doing a really good job. So I think
that's boring. We don't do that. So just going back to what you said earlier, Travis, I really like what you said in regards to APIs being the universal language, regardless of the underlying implementation. I think that's very realistic because we can empower a team to select the language, do what you like within the guidelines that we agree across an organization. It doesn't matter though, because the end result is this open API spec. And that's something that we can share. However, the open API spec, in my experience, a lot of the times is something that gets generated, whether it's automatically through introspection or gets written as part of the design first API and all that kind of stuff. Regardless, we have this thing that lives in, let's say, version control, right? It's a pretty popular thing to do. And that's not always the easiest thing to do. So I'm curious how you guys have enabled API discovery. I think every company does it slightly differently. And it just sitting inside of version control, in my experience, is just not conducive to what we're trying to do, which is enable API discovery in order to build on top of each other's APIs and get everything else that we've talked about so far. So maybe talk a little bit about that from a DevX perspective, please.
Yeah, there are so many points in there I want to touch on. I'm going to focus on your last bullet, which is like API discovery. And that was huge for us, 100%. We were coming from a world before this initiative where APIs were just deployed out there. Our service discovery method was just DNS. So it's like, oh, I just need to know the DNS. And once I know a DNS, it's like, well, if I want to find your Swagger UI middleware or your old Swagger V2 spec at the time, I just have to know the address. And so in a lot of cases, individuals would take that address and put it like, here's a link on my README on my GitHub repo, which then is like, okay, well, I can't even find the repo. How do I? You're speaking very much to my heart in terms of like, yeah, definitely been there, know that struggle very well. And I've seen it in other organizations as well. And so our first stab at that was, well, we need some type of developer portal, right? We need a developer portal where we can list these things out. We can find the metadata information and ideally just have a link that at least takes you to that specification. So that allows me to have that central spot that I can kind of at least find the API I want and then navigate to the information I need, the spec on its own. That was all right. That worked okay. But really what we were looking for was this more higher fidelity experience where I could actually have an API reference that was searchable that actually at one single command could search across all of the API specs in the organization, as well as have programmatic access to that, right? Like we have a case as an example where it's like our security team wants to use open API specs based on unique service IDs that represent that service in the organization to run active scanning. It's pretty standard. So having that all programmatically accessible, as well as kind of the human accessibility, developer experience of how do I search and access all the OpenAPI specs across the organization? That was exactly what we wanted to hit and what we wanted to solve. And so part of what we did for that was we ended up using a tool called it's actually pretty funny that many individuals in your organization do call it Spotlight, which feels like a better name to me, but
actually there's something there.
But it's a great tool that allows you to have that developer portal that has the API specification in it. So that process I talked about earlier in our CI/CD where like lints and then tells you, oh, here's all the things you did wrong. You don't get a choice at that point. It then also publishes it into Spotlight, and then you can take a look at it from there and search it across the org. And so just driving that awareness, like you say, and that discovery has had big impact. We've instituted a design review process for APIs now as well that is allowing individuals to discover APIs they never knew existed in the organization, and also understand even earlier on in design discussions when they're talking about implementing, they can even have a look at it and decide if that API is worth their integration even before talking to that team. So It's reducing some friction and enabling collaboration in a lot of ways that you would hope it was, and is what we've seen.
When we talk about API-led product growth, that is typically about new revenue streams or new products being launched or new user bases or new segments. So tell us a little bit about how this can be, A, adding value. What kind of outcomes do you work towards with this? And what kind of business value would you say this is also bringing, because as a consequence of these great tooling and standards that are being put in place?
Yeah, that's a good one. And I don't have a silver bullet for you on this one, because trying to bridge that gap first of even introducing an organization to developer experience and then pursuing that with like the business side of the organization, and they may not get it. Like I always compare it to like code reuse, right? When I think about code reuse in the organization, which would be another fun podcast, but a lot of product owners are like, what do you mean you want to make it reusable? I thought all code was reusable, right? There's that disconnect of understanding some of those differences. And so trying to bring this to that business level, like where do I get my value at the end of the day, is incredibly important. And so we've done a couple of different things. You know, we have a great technical product team that we've started to introduce that is starting to bridge that gap between driving our APIs as products, which is something that our non-technical product team couldn't really do to the same degree, right? We need to bridge this gap, include this proxy that is almost acting on behalf of the technology department, but also understands the business very well. So being able to have someone there as a regular proxy for that information, we found to be pretty helpful on the longer term. But in terms of what we want to instill and how we think about APIs, we think about APIs as going back to that API-led product growth. Like APIs are our mechanism of how we're going to grow this product. And why is that different with an API? Because we believe APIs will allow us to scale in ways that we couldn't before through third-party interactions, which is a goal of ours, right? Building that viral market kind of effect, that marketplace, having those third-party integrations that are built not by you, not by us internally, but by others. That's when we start to achieve that kind of that escape velocity style growth. And so we see definitely like APIs as a component that can work with our size and increase our rate of change. So the number of customers we can affect is far greater. The reach, which is expanding our addressable market, like who we can impact with an API and the capabilities that we have and the value we add, then is directly related to that.
And I think you spoke about API automation as well. I would imagine, again, because of the predictable, hopefully predictable nature of the conventions that you're putting in place, I think the predictability drives automation to a certain degree, I think, which is why I think I use the example of self-driving cars, for instance. I think where traffic patterns are more predictable, that's where something like a self-driving car is probably going to be a little bit more viable versus places which are not. I'm currently in India at the moment. I mean, I can't fathom the idea of having self-driving cars without manual control in this case, whereas where I usually live, which is Singapore, where you're very rules focused in most cases, there you can, it's a lot more comprehensible. It's a lot more predictable. And therefore having automated systems driving that, I think would make a lot of sense. And equally, that would mean that once you have these automation in place, your basics administrative requirements have again been taken care of, so that again, you can start thinking about your business logic of application. Start thinking about the value that is going to be driven by your application, as opposed to looking at the minutiae of, okay, day to day, is my code limited properly? Have I commented my code properly? And all of those different convention practices, which are important, absolutely important, but they are being taken care of because of good standards, compliance is in place, plus really good developer experience trying to drive you forward in your journey of building great products. So absolutely agree with you on that. Setki, on that point, anything specific that you might have come across where great developer experience or great sort of rules and regulations are driving innovation in organization or driving product-led growth there?
Yeah, I mean, everything you and Travis mentioned, GitOps, unit testing as code, everything that we can do to automate our build process. I think that's where we catch as much bugs as we can. That's where we should be enforcing all of our rules. So yeah, I think that's the most important thing. The last thing I would add is good documentation is critical to part of this. It's a little bit outside the topic of rules, but you know, as a developer, the best developer experience I can have, especially with integrating with an API, whether it's internal or third party, is how easy is it for me to do this? Number one, is it easy for me to discover what the purpose of this API is? Going back to Travis, your point about a product-led API versus an API for the sake of an API. A product-led API makes sense. Like, let's take a fintech example. I want to build a trading platform that allows me to trade crypto. Are the APIs spelled out where I can easily create an account, I can deposit funds, I can make a trade? Or is it just a dump of all of the different endpoints and that I have to figure out? So it's all those little things. I say little, but obviously critical to the developer experience. So no, that's my piece, Abuda. I think you and Travis nailed it. Thanks.
One thing, Setki, that like I'm glad you brought up documentation. It's a large pain point. Obviously, anyone in DX has to deal with. I mean, we all have to deal with it because we all deal with bad documentation. And one thing we've been exploring with our teams is like your inaccurate documentation, that's worse than having no documentation. Like you need to do better. Like you not just do it, but keep it up to date. And so we've been pushing hard on documentation from the DX perspective, especially in the API space. Because when we talk about it, we also think about it in terms of the Divio style documentation quadrants. I don't know if you've seen those. Talk about like the idea of four types of documentation, right? You have reference docs, which is your API spec, but I also have like tutorials and I have how-to guides and I have explanation style documentation. And understanding when and where to use those and putting them alongside your API reference spec is huge. Like it's a big difference. And so we've been pushing that a lot with our teams, and we've built a component that will include all of the markdown in a repo along with the style guide and the API reference all together and kind of package it as one kind of component to help drive that with teams.
I do not expect everyone to be doing that. That sounds like this is what we'd love to have. Hopefully you guys are doing this for the most part. Who's responsible for the creation of all those four different segments? Is it the team as a development? I'm doing X, Y, Z, or is it a group? Is it a group effort across, say, a tech writer and other folks?
Yeah, no, great question. And I wish I had a better response to you. In fact, I feel like I've been saying I wish I had a better response to you for a couple conferences that I've had in the past couple months, because I feel like this question always comes up. It's like, well, who writes it? And the reality for us, we're still maturing in that. Right now, it's our engineers. I'm not sure if that's the right answer, but it's what we have today, because a lot of teams don't have the opportunity to have a technical writer baked in as a part of their process. And even if there was, how do you augment that and how you work with a technical writer and the engineering team and the product owner kind of all together? So today, it's mostly our engineers, and we're driving that to be more of a collaboration with our technical product owners and the engineers together. But definitely, yeah, it takes
them. Here's why I think that is the right solution is because as developers, I'm certainly guilty of this. It's very easy for me to lose track of what it is that I'm building and get really focused on the tech. When I'm expected to build the documentation in addition to the API and then make it very easy to consume, I'm putting myself in the perspective of the user. So that very common disconnect between the developer and the consumer starts to vanish when we do that properly. So in my experience, whether you're doing design first API specs or you're writing your APIs, writing your documentation, or truthfully, most common, writing your API and then introspecting it, or I guess a combination of that and the second option, it doesn't matter. As long as I have good documentation and then those other questions, how do we keep it in sync and how do we make sure that it's in sync in an automated fashion with my API and all this kind of stuff. So it is a whole world of documentation, but I definitely agree that it should be the developers who are writing the documentation, whose job it is to do the product marketing. I think that's when we're starting to move well away from developer experience, but it's another really interesting conversation to have.
Absolutely. I was going to get into that because, I mean, but I'm stopping myself at the moment because really within Tyke as well, we've sort of been looking and trying to solve this problem a little bit where we've got engineers, we've got all of the knowledge, the other people who have built the product and therefore probably in the best possible position to talk about it or at least document it. And like Setki mentioned, I think it's very important to be able to have that connect where you're not just building a product for, you know, because that is what the spec says, but it's because it's a real problem and real world needs that are driving this particular product update and build that you're doing. So, but equally, I think there is an opportunity to supplement that, maybe augment that with technical writers, because you said there are four, like you said, there are four kinds of documentation you might have, and there might be four levels to that, where you might be starting off with that basic documentation that speaks to developers and has that basic pure understanding of the technology that is going into this. But beyond that, then looking at the use cases, looking at, okay, what is it actually driving and really having a story behind it? There's a narrative behind it. That's where you get in the level of maybe product education, customer education, look at product marketing coming in. So there might be a couple of people who might be involved in it. It's probably not going to be a responsibility of a single person or even maybe a single team for that matter. So absolutely, it's API documentation always fascinates you because again, with so many different API styles, there is so many different perspectives around it. There's a whole world of GraphQL, supposedly self-documenting documentation associated with it, which again, I think we just discussed that it's not quite the same thing that you would want out of a true documented product. But we'll get into that perhaps in a future episode. But as of now, this has been a fantastic discussion. Thank you. Thank you so very much, Travis, for joining us. Anything, any final words, any final tips that you might want to give to the listeners, to the audience, based off of your experience in the world of developer experience and what they should be looking at if they were starting their journey perhaps today?
Yeah, trying to think here. One obvious one is from the developer experience perspective is do a lot of listening, work with your teams, get involved in their day-to-day process and really understand where you can make an impact and where you can change their quality of life. It can take a lot of effort to do, but I think very quickly you'll spot some very obvious patterns. And when we think about developer productivity engineering, it's an engineering field, right? So back it up with metrics, drive the change you want to make with some clear value that you can show before you do it. That being said, sometimes I've noticed in developer experience as well that there are just obvious wins. I don't need, like, we can just call out that I need to do this thing because it's such a big, obvious frictional piece in the organization that spending 3 months to analyze the impact of it rather than just spending the 3 months to do it can be not worthwhile. Just get it done, so to speak. So drive that balance a little bit, understand it. And I think there's a ton of work ahead in the next decade with developer experience as we figure out how to increase our quality of life, reduce that friction, and reduce toil.
Thank you so much. That is wise words to end our session on today. It has been absolutely wonderful talking with you. I'm pretty certain we could go on for another hour, maybe two, talking about all things APIs as we do on this podcast. So thank you so much again, once again, for joining us. Hopefully we'll get you back at some point in the future as well. But this has been fantastic. Thank you so much, Setki, for co-hosting the session with me. Amazing questions and insights as well. And with that, thank you everyone for listening. And until next time, take care. Thanks for listening to this episode of All About APIs. Powered by Tyke, a leading cloud-native API management platform for the modern stack. So come, empower your teams and put your devs in the driver's seat. If you want to find out more, visit us at tyke.io. And until next time, take good care of yourself.